sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team, sitting here with Becky Ivins.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Becky. How's your week been?
It's been a great week, actually. Yeah. We've sold a few properties, which that makes it a really good week.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a couple of those were to clients who've been looking for a while. And we finally snagged a property that just hit the market for them. So it feels good.
I had one this week that I haven't had in quite a while, which was a bank repossession that I got a client under contract. There hasn't been many bank repossession properties out there.
Well, you're about to see a lot more.
And that's where I was thinking this after doing that this week. I'm thinking we're probably going to see more of this in the next year, which is more normal. I mean, that's been a normal part of real estate. Is there's people who purchase who, for one reason or another, stop paying their mortgages and the bank takes it back. And that has a special...
Do you know, we need to do a show on that, about why do people stop making their mortgage payments?
Yeah.
And when they do, what happens?
Yeah, that'd be a great... And then after the purchase process... Always takes more time. You always have to, you know, there's always little hurdles that you have to overcome that are different than
a
typical.
People making the decisions on that, first of all, the good part is they're not emotionally
involved.
There's
no emotional involvement.
The bad part is they're making decisions on something they've never seen and they don't know the local market.
Yep.
Because they're usually an out-of-state somebody that is just supposed to be liquidating assets that were taken in at a loss. So,
right, that's exactly right.
Talk about a no-win situation.
Yeah, so I had that this week, which I haven't had one of those in quite some time. So it'd be a good thing.
Well, do you know
so
what we're today, talking about today?
I do.
Something I don't know very much about, but it has been in the news, and it's an important thing. So we don't have one lawyer. We've got two to discuss this, mainly with each other, because they know what they're talking about. The McGirt decision.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one show that people share that's going to be very informative. So I'm excited about where we're heading.
So I'll introduce our attorneys for us. Okay. My personal attorney and corporate attorney is Ron Shalott. And I'm going to do a little commercial for Ron. Ron, if anybody asks for should I call an attorney, I text them your number because I have found you to be honest, forthright with information, and definitely you're not in it just for the money. You do good for people, and you try to avoid going to court, and I like that. So, good morning.
Well, good morning. Gosh, I can go home now.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sure I could have used better words to describe that. But my other attorney that is in my life, my business life, more than personal, but we are personally good friends too, is Ken McBride. And Ken, good morning.
Good morning.
Ken is president of, I almost said Capital Abstract. Back in the day. How about Chicago Title, Oklahoma? How many offices do you have now?
We have 9 offices now.
Wow. There could be an office I've not been to.
It's possible.
Wow. Okay. I've closed at 2 of your offices that I've not physically appeared because they were remote closings. So, and those are 2 that I know I have not been to. So, anyway, you've got a good market share with a lot of closers in the metro. You do about half of them.
We do a substantial portion, and we're very proud to have the number one market share in Oklahoma County, and delighted to have the customers that we have.
Yeah. So, okay. So, McGirt, who wants to go forth and say what this is about? Ron, how about you?
How about me? Okay. Well, it's McGirt versus the state of Oklahoma.
It's okay. Not the state of Oklahoma versus McGirt.
Well, not when you get up to the Supreme Court.
Right.
It's not. Mainly because he is the person bringing the appeal. McGirt was a case centered around criminal law, and we'll talk about why in the world are we discussing that in a real estate program. But it was about a criminal law case under the Major Crimes Act, which is a federal statute. The court held that Congress had not dissolved Indian reservations in Oklahoma and potentially other places, which affected who had jurisdiction, and that's the right to decide criminal law cases. McGirt was an Indian who had committed a crime on Indian land against an Indian, and consequently his state conviction went up on appeal based on the premise that Oklahoma state courts, where he was convicted, did not have the authority, in other words, did not have the jurisdiction or the right to decide his case. He went up through the appellate court system, district court, 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, and finally to the United States Supreme Court, which surprisingly to a lot of us, in a 5-4 decision, decided that Oklahoma had no business deciding that case because Congress had not dissolved Indian reservations in Oklahoma.
And that when was this appeal? Now, the case was like what, 2020?
The case itself was, the decision was in 2020.
But the appeal just came out like last month. I mean, the decision on that?
No, the McGirt case was decided in 2020. In fact,
okay,
you may not recall this, but I recall it simply because I recall bringing this up. I was on your show a couple of years ago, and I forgot what we were talking about, but I did point out that, hey, this McGirt case just got decided. This may have an impact on real estate and other areas of law because it was such a significant revelation, I'll call it that, from the United States Supreme Court, that we may want to watch this and pay attention to it.
Okay. So how does this relate to real estate, Ken McBride?
Well, to begin with, in the McGirt case, it's interesting that although the case is a criminal case, and although the issues before the court were had to do with the jurisdiction of the state of Oklahoma to enforce the state laws against an Indian committing a crime against an Indian on Indian land, there was a discussion in the case about real estate. And sometimes the court will give a lot of historical perspective to, and in particularly in this issue, to their decision. But they talk specifically about what they refer to as the allotment era. And that's a reference to a period of time that really started in the 1880s that had to do with the taking lands that were, as I understand it, held in common by the tribe and allotting those lands to the individual members of the tribe so that they could do what they wanted to do with that land, meaning they could encumber that land, they could borrow against that land, they could sell that land, they could provide in their estate for the land to go to someone when they passed on. So it would completely change the ownership of the land for these tribes.
So it would be, is that what they considered part of the trust land, that people were given this as a different subject, right?
Now, you have to understand the area of the law because there are really three types of lands that are relevant. Trust land, Indian trust land is one type, and it's the most common. There is also restricted fee land that's owned by an Indian or Indian tribe with restrictions on transfers. And then there's also a fee land, which is owned outright by an Indian or non-Indian with no restrictions. So you really have three different types of land. And Oklahoma is interesting because we do have a sovereignty symposium, have had it for about 3 decades. Oh, yeah. I think the Bar Association, I think Justice Opala was big on that, and the late Justice Opala. And we do have a very active Indian bar in the Oklahoma Bar Association with Indian law attorneys. So Oklahoma really is very well aware of all of this and the impact on Indian tribes.
Well, certainly, there is a lot of it. And we have a complex history with land in Oklahoma. We love our land. And real estate is all about land and the improvements thereupon. And we'll continue the conversation when we get back on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're talking with attorneys Ron Shalott and Ken McBride.
And we're talking about the McGirt decision, but really a more recent decision of last month. But let's kind of review where we started, Ron.
Well, the McGirt decision was a criminal law case. An Indian committed a crime against another Indian on tribal lands. Oklahoma prosecuted it in their criminal court system, went up through the appellate route, and eventually the United States Supreme Court made the 5-4 decision that Oklahoma did not have the authority to prosecute in its state courts. Therefore, McGirt should have been prosecuted either in tribal courts or in the federal court system under the Major Crimes Act.
And so how does that affect real estate? Why are we even talking about this?
Well, from our standpoint, it was helpful in the McGirt decision that there was so much discussion about the allotments and the distribution of land to individual tribal members. And in fact, the case says, so the relevant statute expressly contemplates private land ownership within reservation boundaries. Nor under the statute's terms does it matter whether these individual parcels have passed hands to non-Indians. Basically, reviewing the fact that there is congressional law that permits the sale of these lands in what is we're referring to as Indian country to others, including non-Indians. And we have taken the position from an underwriting standpoint on title insurance that that the coverage that we offer is not altered by the McGirt decision, but we do put a note on our policies that just puts the lender on notice that at some point, because of the jurisdictional issues raised in McGirt, they might have to foreclose if they had to foreclose in federal court. And of course there have been some loans that have always been foreclosed in federal court for whatever reason, and so it's not that unusual to have a foreclosure in federal court, but it's not clear. There are a lot of things not clear from the McGirt decision, but it's not clear that would even be required. But we at least put a note on there that someone might need to know that at some point in the future, if they did foreclose, they might have to observe different jurisdictional rules.
The question going around for about 100 years is whether Oklahoma had reservations or not. My lovely wife, who grew up in Oklahoma City, went through the Oklahoma City public school systems, et cetera, she had always told me when I moved here, Oklahoma does not have reservations.
Oh.
She's wrong.
Right.
Well, she's wrong. They do. And the question that McGirt looked at were the Indian reservations disestablished? In other words, did Congress eliminate them? McGirt went through a lot of history about it, and Congress had never expressly said there are no reservations. These tribes have been disestablished. It was by implication, and a lot of people were thinking for 100 years that they weren't around. Even tribes and tribal members had said, well, yeah, we don't have reservations, et cetera. But that's all changed now. So what's the impact is we now have questions arise over whether the McGirt concepts spill over into other areas, spill over into such things as real estate titles, which, you know, Ken's talking about, title transfers, including probate, because there are sometimes you have to go through tribal courts to probate, and subsurface rights, also known as oil, gas, mineral interests. So there are things that could affect. Will it affect is the open-ended question that Ken and I could debate all day, and I don't think we're smart enough to come up with an answer to that.
Well, I could argue that point the other direction. But when it comes to land, we've heard a couple years ago, you know, the news was that Eastern Oklahoma may, the people in Eastern Oklahoma may not have clear title to their own land, right?
Well, I believe that the people in Eastern Oklahoma that have purchased their property own their land just the same as they did before. The difference that McGirt has brought has to do with the jurisdiction of a legal action that may involve that land. The interesting thing, like I said, McGirt had a much greater discussion of real estate than was necessary to determine the actual issues before the court. But one of the statements that the Supreme Court said in the McGirt case, they said the federal government issued its own land patents to many homesteaders throughout the West. These patents transferred legal title and are the basis for much of the private land ownership in a number of states today. So there is nothing in the McGirt case that that would undermine the distribution of the allotted lands and the structure for approving titles in the eastern part of Oklahoma that we had before. And in fact, I would maintain that because they had so much discussion of allotments that that they have in essence confirmed that the allotment system was legally and properly done.
That's interesting, because I know, Becky, the first thing you do when somebody comes to you and says, I want to sell my house, is you check, or we check.
Who owns the house?
Who owns the house? Do they have the right to sell what they're saying they're going to sell?
Right. So it's been cleared up through the Supreme Court on the McGirt decision. Anything since then?
Well, I'm not sure that I would go so far as to say it's cleared up. I would say that the way I read the language in the McGirt case about allotments, it's reassuring about that process, because they do not criticize or in any way undermine the validity of the distribution of tribal lands to the tribal members. However, there has been a case that was decided by the court June 29th, and I may not be pronouncing this correctly.
Of this year.
This year.
Of this year, yes.
I mean, a week ago.
The ink is not quite dry.
I feel like we should have, like, breaking news sound coming on or something.
It was decided June 29th, 2022, Oklahoma versus Castro Huerta. And in this case, they have already changed the jurisdictional rules that were set forth in the McGirt case. So much of the actual decision of McGirt was modified or changed in the Castro Huerta decision.
The justice that wrote the McGirt decision, Neil Gorsuch, was actually from our federal circuit, 10th Circuit, was new on the court when the McGirt decision came out. He wrote the opinion. I said it was a 5-4 decision. I've said that a couple of times because the Oklahoma versus Castro Huerta decision was also 5-4, but the other way. And Gorsuch was actually in the dissent. He filed a dissenting opinion chastising the Castro Huerta court for not following McGirt to the letter and for diluting the concept of the Indian sovereignty and reservation. So what was the difference between 2020 and 2022? Well, you had Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court in the 2020 decision, who then made the majority 5-4. She had passed away, and Justice Amy Barrett was appointed to the court, who was of the opposite persuasion, so she provided the fifth vote for the other direction. So you had two 5-4 decisions, but going in opposite directions, simply because of change of the court makeup, which is not that unusual. But Castro Huerta involved a non-Indian. As a matter of fact, he wasn't even here legally. He had overstayed his welcome. A non-Indian crime against an Indian. And so the question there was whether or not he could be prosecuted under the McGirt decision in Oklahoma State Court. And as Ken pointed out, the U.S. Supreme Court there decided there is concurrent jurisdiction between the state and the federal courts on that type of issue.
Here's what I love about real estate is that there are so many different aspects. You better have a team of really smart people around you, like we have Ron Chalot and Ken McBride. And we'll be back with more right after this on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team, here with Becky Ivins, and we're having a great conversation with Kim McBride, president of Chicago Title, and Ron Chalot, Oklahoma City attorney. And Ron, what's our word of the day?
Our word.
Word of the day is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 405-728-3700. That's 728-3700. All right, Ron, now what is our word of the day?
Word of the day, anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Oh, easy for you to say.
For the longest time, the Guinness Book of World Records had listed that as the longest word in the English language. It's since been replaced. There are some medical terms and some technical terms that have taken its place as the longest word. And in fact, Merriam-Webster, I was reading this morning, doesn't even recognize it as a word because it hasn't had enough usage. So,
well, let's change that.
Well,
we're on a crusade.
Thanks to the McGirt decision, we might be able to make history and change that. The word originally came out for those who opposed the state removing the state church from receiving government patronage. And you got to remember, this was in the Church of England and England paying the patronage. And so for 300 years, they've been doing it, and they changed it. And those who were opposed to it, it was called anti-disestablishmentarianism. But now we could revive that. Those who are advocating that Indian reservations were not disestablished, we can call that anti-disestablishmentarianism.
That is true.
So we might have resurrected a long word.
Man, okay. Well, our word of the day brought to you by Robbins Roofing. And I will tell you, if there's been some hail, not here in the metro, but in surrounding areas that are in our listening area. And I just want to repeat Robbins Roofing number for you one more time, because they will come out and check your roof and let you know whether or not you've got an insurance claim, or you've got you should be buying buckets at Walmart to catch the rain. It is 728-3700, 405-728-3700, or you can always go to?
You can always go to BeckyIvins.com, click on Becky's Favorites. You'll see Robbins Roofing right there. You also see Ron Chalot. You also see Chicago Title. And if you are facing anything in real estate that you're not really sure where to turn, you can always call our office, 405-722-3232. We try to help you, whether it is anti-disestablishmentarianism, or whether it's your leaky roof or plumbing, we can help you.
Yes, for sure. Ken, I called you not all that long ago about tribal land. So I'm going to resurrect that story. I don't think I ever told you what happened with that. I had 40-some acres for sale out in the, was that Hera or Choctaw area, out by the new Kickapoo Turnpike, right? And got like 11 offers on it. Everybody offered higher than it was listed for. And what started on this was this lady called me and said, well, I found you on the internet, and it seems that you tell the truth on real estate. I said, well, to the best of my knowledge, I do. And she said, somebody called and wanted to buy this land from me, and they wanted to offer me $1,000 an acre for it. And I would be okay with that, but I just need to know, is that a good price? I said, well, you want to sell it to me for $1,000 an acre? She said, well, don't you want to know where it is? I said, well, you've told me sort of where it is. And yes, I would pay that for it, but I couldn't do that with a good conscience. I said, I would actually pay you twice that for it. I said, but probably I could get you more money if I put it for sale. So if you don't have to have the money like tomorrow, let's take our time and figure out what this is worth. And we ended up selling it. It was well over $200,000 for 40 acres. And I had this guy call me, and this was at like 4:30, and I was in rush hour traffic, and he calls and says, the Kickapoo Nation is having a meeting tomorrow about putting an injunction against the sale of this land, and I can buy it from you because it can only be sold to a relative because there are artifacts and burial grounds on the land. And they're having a meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I said, well, first of all, you probably knew about this meeting prior, and it's real big of you to call me at 4:30 the night before a 9 o'clock meeting to tell me about that. And so I was like going, well, no, we don't need an injunction against this. The person selling it was quite elderly, and they were really concerned about that person living past this sale. And so the guy gave me his name and his phone number, and I tried to call the Kickapoo Nation, and I couldn't get an answer because by the time I landed somewhere, it was after 5 o'clock. I thought, I'm just going to go in the morning to this meeting to find out really what it's all about. So I called Ken McBride, and he said, well, that would be a good idea to show up for that meeting. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, and you did tell me, well, the BIA gets involved, Bureau of Indian Affairs, because of trust property, land that was allotted to the natives, and they can't sell that land without the BIA approval because the BIA wants to be sure that the Native American is not taken advantage of. So anyway, I decided, no, I'm not going to go to the meeting because I didn't even know where it was. And so I called starting before 9 o'clock. I got a hold of somebody and said, I need to know where the meeting is, what's it about, and this kind of stuff. And they checked and checked and checked. There was no meeting at all. This guy was trying to get an unfair advantage over the other people. He had made an offer, but his offer was not selected. And he wanted the land, even if he didn't have to play fair to get it, right? So when it comes to the trust land, tell us about that.
Well, and let me precede this by saying that I'm not an expert in Indian lands, and we generally determine using underwriting standards whether we can insure title to property. But my understanding is that the conveyances have to show approval from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The conveyance from the tribal member, that initial conveyance has to be approved. And like you said, it's a built-in process to try and reduce the some type of improper conveyances or conveyances that are obtained under duress. There are stories, and in fact, some of them recounted even in the decision, of people conveying property that are under duress, and they're forced one way or another to do so. So there are some protections there that that will generally, my understanding is, show in that initial conveyance from the tribal member, but are not required on subsequent conveyances to other parties.
And my question on that would be, what type of land was it? We talked originally there were three types. Was this Indian trust land? Because Indian trust land, the U.S. government holds the title in trust for the tribe or for the individual. And the U.S. Supremacy Clause then precludes a state or local regulation from getting involved without the federal approval. But there's also restricted fee land, and that's not trust land, but it's owned by the individual Indian or the tribe with the restriction on transfer requirements that require the consent of the United States government, which is the Secretary of the Interior through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So you have that, and then you have the unrestricted fee land. So first off, you have to figure out where does it fall into that. Oklahoma, in fact, Article 1, Section 3 of the Oklahoma Constitution states in the Enabling Act that Oklahoma has that Oklahoma agrees that all right and title to lands held by Indians, tribes, or Indian nations is disclaimed by Oklahoma. That was in our creation of the state, long before I came here, by the way. Oklahoma has disclaimed those, so that's why you have this issue coming up is, you know, who has the land? And Oklahoma hasn't changed its constitution. It's still there. So now they have to look at either Congress enacting federal law and sometimes breaking treaties, which both McGirt and Carlos Huerta have said that, you know, federal government has done many times over the past years, unfairly, I'll say, to the Indians, or to get tribal consent. And currently, Indian tribes have been more organized than ever before, I think. They've got more courts now. This has required them to add to their court system, to add to their attorneys. Good for us, probably. Maybe not for Ken and I. We're probably a little past that time, but you know, we could have gotten employed. So it was a situation where the tribes have become more organized. Yet this does resonate with regard to real estate transfers.
And my question is, well, how do you know what type of land this is? Is it an allotment or restricted fee land or fee, right?
Trust land, restricted fee or fee land. I would say go through a title search.
Yeah, it's determinable through the search of the title, through an examination of the abstract, and we make that determination. Most of the property would fall under the category of being in a fee category. And so most of it has already been, the restrictions have already been removed from that land. And so it's a little bit unusual for us to run into land that is either restricted fee or trust land. But it is out there, and it's a concern.
I was concerned because this man's 92 years old, and he inherited this land from his father, who inherited it from the grandfather. And I was like going, isn't that like before statehood? I mean, as you start counting back. So I did call the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and I was surprised how quickly I got an answer on that. And I was familiar with the Bureau of Indian Affairs because out of college for 5 years, I was a social worker, and I started in Caddo County, where we definitely had a Bureau of Indian Affairs to deal with when funds were given to the Native Americans at that point. Of course, at that point, we called them Indians, right? And times have changed. But I was surprised how quickly I got an answer that there was no restriction on that land and it could be sold. And so I called the Kickapoos back, the Kickapoo Nation, and I said, I need to talk to someone in authority that knows that will take this name and know that this guy is threatening using the Kickapoo Nation as his leverage and his hammer when they had no intent at all. There was nothing going on there, but he was just trying to get, as you put it, an unfair advantage on the purchase of the land. So there's a lot of stuff, particularly in Oklahoma County and, frankly, surrounding counties that have to do with native lands. And that's what we've been talking about.
And we use the term Indian simply because that's what the statutes say. That's what the federal regulations say. That's what the court is talking about when they use it. No disrespect to Indians, calling them Native Americans would be great, but that's not the language that the courts use. So we can use those terms interchangeably ourselves, but they use the term Indian, so we've been using that.
The Supreme Court used the same language?
The Supreme Court used the term Indian, yes.
Really? Some,
every now and then they throw in a Native American,
yeah.
but almost always it was Indian, non-Indian.
Well, because they examine the law, right? So they have to use the verbiage that's in the law.
Language and land. It's a really interesting topic.
You've got treaties and congressional acts, so yes.
Yeah, we'll be back with more on this discussion. Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000, KTOK. Uh-huh. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. It's time for our smoking hot deal. Our smoking hot deal is brought to you by Casa Perico Mexican Grill, located on the south corner of 122nd and Penn and 63rd, just west of Meridian, and soon coming to Yukon. Casa Perico, fresh hot Mexican food.
We're going to have a party when the Yukon opens, and we'll invite all you guys to come.
That's going to be a good day.
Yeah, it'll be a great day.
Yep. Becky, what's our smoking hot deal?
Well, I'm going to give you an address. It's not on the market yet. It will be on the market in about 10 days, maybe 2 weeks, because we just had tenants move out, and we need to just fluff it up a little bit.
Clear it out and clean it up.
Yep. And I'm doing the walkthrough today and to be sure that it's, you know, empty. The address is 1709 Pennington Circle. That's in Midwest City. It's Choctaw Schools, which is a good thing. A lot
great.
Of people love Choctaw Schools.
Yep.
And it is a 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath, and a nice size 2-car garage. And it's got a big lot with lots of big shade trees on it.
I think it's just a touch over 1,600 square feet.
It's 1,643.
There you go.
Square feet. And it's got a bonus flex area upstairs as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's $199,000. When that goes on the market, I mark my word, there will be multiple
offers
on that.
It will be quick. Yeah.
So that's our smoking hot deal.
So we're here kind of landing the plane here with Ron Shalhott and Kim McBride on what's been an incredibly enlightening conversation to me. I've through this just keep learning more and more.
So what, Ken, kind of what is your last thought on this?
You know, one of the things I want to bring up is the fact that the circumstance that that you, Becky, have been talking about is a wonderful example about that it makes a difference if you have a professional realtor assisting you when you buy and sell real property. Your client was a 92-year-old gentleman who needed the help to make sure that he was not taken advantage of by someone who was trying to assert something on his property or use a decision to get them leverage to be able to get a better deal on the property. And it's so important to have someone like you who's willing to ask the questions, willing to make the phone calls to somehow find the validity of someone who's coming in and trying to assert some kind of advantage. I think people think that buying and selling real estate is comparatively simple, and in some instances it might be. But when you have, you never know when something is going to come up. You're going to need a professional who's there not only to see that you're getting the best value for your property, but also to guide you through what may come up in the course of the transaction.
Kind of be able to spot things in advance that could be trouble spots is what I like to think of it. And experience does that for you. And just being an astute personality to look for those things rather than just, oh, let's just turn a blind eye to it, you know? So, Ron, what would be your last word?
Well, a couple of years ago when the McGirt decision came up, we brought that up and said that may be an issue. And it's an issue, and I think Ken's brought out an excellent point in another direction that I hadn't thought of, which is people read about that in the newspaper and what's going on and the complaints or the praise of it, whichever. So you're going to have some people that are going to throw that out and say, oh, but under the McGirt decision, you can't sell that, or you have to do this or do that. You are wise enough to know how to fix it. There may not be some realtors out there who know about that or know enough about it to realize this is either an issue or not an issue, and either know how to find out the answer to that question or talk to someone like Ken or call an attorney to ask the questions to get the right answers as to whether this is important or not.
So yesterday I was going through, we had multiple offers on a property, and I pulled one of them up, and it said, I'm rescinding this. My client wants me to rescind this offer, spelled R-E-S-E-N-D, meaning they are going to send it again. So I called the realtor because I had already heard through the office talk that one of the offers had been rescinded. And so I called and explained to the realtor that it was, they sound the same words, but they mean opposite. It is R-E-S-C-I-N-D instead of R-E-S-E-N-D. And she listened and was very polite. And then she said, well, I do understand the difference in that. And my client asked me to send it again because before they had sent their whole loan application, and Judy in your office said, we shouldn't have this sensitive information. So they really were resending the information. So I was really trying to just look out for her and go, man, this means the opposite. But she was really on top of it anyway. So there are some realtors that are very much on top of it.
So in real estate, words matter. One last question, yes or no, opinion. A lot of things in McGirt still trying to get figured out. Do you think it'll go back to the Supreme Court in some way?
In some direction it will. I know we have a case in Oklahoma right now under district court where they're looking at it.
There it
direction.
Is. Yep. Lawyer cannot say yes or no. Thanks for joining us on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000, KTOK.